It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy. This is number 305, the podcast sidekick compendium. What's another word for something on the side? The mistress to the Access of Easy newsletter, which you can subscribe to by going to accessofeasy.com. You sign up, you get a little bit of discount on your first buy with Access of Easy, or with EasyDNS, I should say. So if all you have to do is give your email, you get the free newsletter. Lots of good stories in there every week. And then, of course, you can come listen to Len and I. My name is Joey, and we're coming over here from the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, continuing to do the Access of Easy show. Buddy, what's going on over there? How you doing?
Living the dream, man. It's beautiful outside, enjoying it as much as I can, and doing a lot of Canadian Bitcoiners podcasting stuff, Joey. A lot of things that people can see, a lot of things that people won't see for some time. This is very good. We're very exciting times over here, not just in the Canadian Bitcoiner side of things, but Bitcoiners in general. How about you? How are things over there?
I'm fantastic. We are super busy with the other show. We're busy with this show. Big shout out to Mark and the team for getting us the draft of the newsletter before release. Should mention on a scheduling / housekeeping note, the newsletter and the podcast are going to come out at the same time from now on. So
we change schedules. I like that.
That's right. I want to thank the guys and gals over there, because that makes life easy for us and probably easy for you guys too. Let's get right to it, Len. The quote of the week last week: give me self-control, but not now. That was from St. Augustine, famous Catholic saint. Oh, who was it here? Oh, lots of correct answers, but Lee.
Yeah, there were.
Got it first. Yeah, Lee, congratulations, brother. So 50% off your next buy with EasyDNS, or your hosting renewal, I should say. And this week's quote: progress was all right, only it went on too long. Who's that by, Len? That's a good one. I don't know about that one. Interesting. If you know, post it in the comments. No Googling. Don't pervert the contest here. The rules are the rules, and everyone knows them.
It sounds like somebody that from a failed state. That's the only thing I would say.
Yeah, maybe. I guess someone who didn't like the end game there. So
yeah, the end was coming, and they witnessed the end, or they witnessed close to the end. Yeah. Something along those lines. It seemed like the end of days, and that person was witnessing it and is voicing their displeasure as a result
of
it.
One or the other. So we got lots to talk about this week. Do you want to hop right in? I think we got six stories. Mark added a late breaking.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, to talk about as well. Well, let's get into it. There's plenty to discuss here. There's one story I'm surprised we're missing. I'm not going to say what it is, but I'll remind you at the end. And I expect to see it next week for sure.
All right. Well, we could talk about tech giants and civil liberty groups. They're calling foul on the UK's new online safety bill, saying it's too broad and censorious. And the UK and EU governments, they're both banding up to attempt to force backdoors into end-to-end encryptions. This is programs that we use, some people use, like Signal, Session, and a whole bunch of others that are end-to-end encryption. The bill, which is still in its draft form, would force these tech companies to remove harmful content from their platform within a 24 hours of time, very short period of time. But critics say that this is just too short a period of time, in fact. And the bill's definition of what is indeed harmful content is not well-defined and is very vague. So people are beginning to worry that the bill would give the governments too much power to censor some speech that is being bandied about online. And a lot of big players are coming together. So Apple, Google, Meta, and Twitter, they have all said that the bill would risk chilling free expression and innovation. I kind of agree with that. They also said that the bill's definition of harmful content is so broad that it could be used to remove legal content. And like we mentioned, because it's just too vague what it is, what is deemed to be harmful content, who knows what is going to be removed? It could be both legal and illegal stuff. The bill supporters say that this is necessary to protect children from harmful content online. But critics are saying that the bill would do more harm than good by stifling free speech. And really, it's only going to be time will tell if the UK government will heed to these critics' warnings and change their where they're going. But for now, it seems like the online safety bill is heading for a bumpy ride ahead. But the fact that they're using that, the protecting of children and providing safe haven for some of their users, we've heard this before. That's well and good, and that's a good way to get the Trojan horse in there. But once it's there, well, good luck to stop it, because then there could be a lot of encroachment on that point at that time. So who knows, maybe Signal and Session and all these other programs will have to adapt somehow and go. I'm not sure what could happen at that point, but oh man, tough times ahead.
Lack of creativity from elected officials all over the world, wouldn't you say? I'm glad you mentioned that. It's this cookie cutter response all the time. We need to know what you're saying and who you're saying it to, and we need to be able to take down information because of children, harmful content, hate speech. Hate speech, by the way, not real. Okay, I'm going out on a limb here. It's not a real thing. It's an invented term to shoehorn powers that be into your speech habits, into your communication habits, and into your private correspondence. It's ridiculous. It's got to stop. And I'm happy to see Apple and Google and others standing up to this, because part of their model is, you know, being able to talk to somebody. Google relies on freedom of expression. Even, you know, we've talked on the show before, Len, the number of people who search for things that are, you know, unsavory to some huge chunk of the public is gigantic, let alone the messages you send to your friends. I'll be the first to admit that I send many an off-color comment and many an off-color joke to my friends that I would never repeat in mixed company in a professional setting, all these things. And that's my prerogative, as is it yours, as is it everyone else's. And I expect that, you know, people take this seriously, because as we've seen in many stories we've covered on this show, and as we see in something like private money, you know, on the Bitcoin side, what you run into then is self-censorship. The chilling effect is real. And for people who don't know what the chilling effect is, it's basically making an example of somebody or making an example of a group of people or whatever, so that everyone else doesn't have to be part of the, you know, enforcement issues for the powers that be. It's basically a way to scale something like this. You scare somebody, make it public, and everyone else just falls in line on their own. They self-censor. It's terrible. I am also interested in hearing your take on whether or not you think that, you know, some of these platforms, Session, Signal, Telegram, you know, at some point, Len, we don't hear a lot about these guys as far as government overreach and intervention. There's attempts, but pretty soon you got to think that there's going to be like a real concerted effort, I should say, to pin these guys down, right? They seem to be the kind of island in the sun in a lot of ways. They're kind of apart from all these things, and their services, they're widely used and widely known. It's only a matter of time, right?
I don't know if anything can be done. They could try, and they could try to include these
app stores. App stores is the easiest way, right? You go to the app store first, and if you knock down enough people from the app store, you're doing a pretty good job there. You start with that and go from there.
Well, that's 50% of the audience. The other 50% uses Android, and they could always sideload stuff relatively easy. But I find it's rather rich that the companies like Apple, Meta, Google, and Twitter are saying that this is bad, because they themselves have been known to censor stuff. And it's not due to what their overlords say. It's what they believe it to be true. So really, there's, you know, they're walled gardens themselves. And if they don't want any message to be spread within their compound, they could do that. And they've done it in the past, and they'll do it in the future. I just find it's rather rich that they're saying this is going to stop free speech, because they've been perpetrators of stopping free speech themselves. But
yeah,
that's a side note. Anyways, let's move on, because there's so much more we could talk about, and including Elon Musk. He's trying to stop Twitter from becoming in the AI censorship Death Star it's always meant to be. The billionaire, he proposed a series of changes to the platform. And this is limited to, not just limited, but including some things like limiting how many tweets that could be done, retweets, and it's making it also easier for editing tweets that could be posted. But the limiting of the tweets is rather interesting, because this has angered a whole bunch of users out there. And a lot of them are now pointing to other platforms that are in existence, such as Noster, that do not impose these restrictions. And restrictions, these were tiered when they first came out. They were rather severe for a lot of people. And they were tiered because the people that were paying for the blue check mark were able to have a little bit more access than those that were not paying. And that makes sense. You're going to pander for the people that pay for your product versus the people that are not paying for your product. So this is just par for the course. But the goal here is to make Twitter a more open and a free platform for speech. And Musk really is not, you know, he's trying to do his best here, but he's also trying to stop the AI bots to ruin his platform. And he's compared the AI censorship algorithm to a thought police Death Star. He's also joked that the algorithm was designed by a team of highly paid monkeys. And I like this good tongue-in-cheek humor, but it's not enough really to stop the criticism. Some people are praising him for his efforts here to make Twitter more free and open, but others are accusing him of being a hypocrite at the same time. But really, if you look at all this, all these changes and everything like this, the timing is kind of suspect, or maybe bad, I would say, because if you look at what's going on with Meta, they're doing their copy pasta with what's going on with Twitter. And we talked about this not too long ago, I think, when Axis of Easy 304. So if anybody wants to learn a little bit more about this whole Meta version of Twitter, check out that episode. But this seems like the timing of all this, these new restrictions on Twitter, is it a bad timing? Because Threads, which is the Meta version of Twitter that's being copy-pasted, it's going to be released, or it already has been released. And you know what? If people are pissed off with Twitter, they'll go to something else, and maybe Threads is going to be the beneficiary of all this. But I don't know what's going to happen.
I signed up for Meta Threads this morning to protect my Instagram username, which is somewhat coveted. I've had at least one or two people ask me if they can have it. Obviously, I declined both times. But the thing that I think people are miscalculating, maybe just missing altogether, I mean, Twitter is a private enterprise. And I know that's, you know, cliche to say at this point, probably. We've heard that a million times over the last 3 or 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, whatever, maybe even longer if you date back to times when Twitter was censoring things like the Trump campaign, right? It's private enterprise. They can do what they want. Okay. Well, now he's doing this, you know, tweet tiering thing, and the timing you mentioned is interesting. I would add to that one major thing. It's that there was a re-release of the famed and oft-used TweetDeck app that Twitter paid for, which was an independent app years ago. And, you know, as part of the TweetDeck offering, there's many more features, or maybe just the base features even, you can only get by subscribing to Twitter Blue. And so the unverified cells, as I like to call them, they're in a bit of a pinch, right? They've been basically enjoying the value that Twitter's brought to them. And as a result, Twitter has been stuck with, you know, I don't know how much you go on Twitter these days, Len, but like a billion Chinese gadget AliExpress style widget stores with crappy demo videos constantly just looping on your timeline. And these guys want to keep using Twitter, but they don't want to see the ads, but then they also don't want to pay. Well, what do you want to do? Is that adding value for you? If it's adding value, then use it. Threads, the Meta product, again, just to make my take on Zuckerberg absolutely clear, I think Zuckerberg is a piss poor operator and a piss poor manager. Everything he's done, he's either stolen from the Winklevoss twins, bought from another company, or copy pasted from a successor and a rival since, or from another success story or rival since he's taken over Facebook. Every single thing. He hasn't had a single good original idea, not one. And this is another example. I saw so many posts today, Len, from Bitcoin Twitter, and even guys like, you know, the guys from FinTwit who post, you know, edgy memes sometimes, edgy commentary, stuff that maybe you wouldn't say to your grandmother or your parents, but it would be funny to say at a party. And Meta Threads is censoring them. You can't follow Donald Trump Jr. or some other accounts that, you know, used to be trendy to say they were spreading disinformation, or they're spreading hate speech, or they're alt-right. Now Meta's issuing warnings before you follow them and telling you that they often, you know, often will say the things that are false or things that are provably, you know, like, what are we talking about here? These guys are going backwards. Nobody wants that on social media. I don't even think the libs want that on social media anymore. They don't need, you know, to be told what they can and can't follow, who's spreading misinformation, who's not. I think there's going to be a renaissance of the thinking social media user here. And I would suggest to you that Threads, you know, like I said last week, is basically just the Facebook Blue app without Farmville and all the other nonsense gaming stuff and other kind of garbage that came along with that platform. I can't imagine that people who use Twitter use it to talk to their, want to use a clone to talk to their Facebook friends. They use Twitter because they want to be closer to anonymous in a lot of cases, maybe say some things that without having to engage with every midwit that they've ever met, because that's what Facebook is. That's what Instagram is. I think a lot of people are going to go back to Twitter. Nostr, I know, is near and dear to you. I don't think it's reached exit velocity yet. Maybe it will someday, but certainly is not there at the moment. And to me, if he wants to limit tweets, you know, to get back to the story at hand here, if he wants to limit tweets to people who pay for the service, that's his prerogative. I think he should be able to do that. And if you don't like it, then fucking pay. You know, like, I know I'm not supposed to swear on the show, but you got to pay. period. If you want to, use that service and you want to use it to its full capacity, you got to pay. That is a story for every service in your life. Twitter's no different. You may think it is because you're accustomed to it, but those times are changing.
Yeah, 100%. He bought it for what, a $44 billion or whatever that number is. And so he can do what he wants with it. It's his platform for the most part. And he could, whatever he wants to do, it's his baby. Good luck. Have fun doing it. If people like to use it or don't, they could vote with their feet, kind of online feet. But with respect to Meta, or Zuckerberg being not very innovative, name a company that has been innovative. Name anybody, Apple, Twitter, Google, NVIDIA.
So think about all them. Like Twitter came up with the short text tweet format, right? That worked. Snapchat came up with the stories, the disappearing story messages. I could go on. If I really think back to the last 7-8 years of apps that I've used that have been rolled into.
Twitter's been around for 15 years though.
But no, I know. So Twitter innovated at its, during its birth. Since then, arguably you're right, Lennon, hasn't done much innovation.
Maybe what has Google done?
Fix that.
Name a product that Apple's done that's innovative.
Well, Apple, the candy bar phone is basically an Apple product, right? The candy bar phone. Oh, for sure, it's an Apple product. They had the iPhone that's, was the first like quality
that is phone. That is just evolution. That wasn't revolutionary. That was a one to many moment, not a zero to one moment.
So you're talking about zero to ones. Okay. Yeah.
These companies have done none of this.
I'm sure they have. Maybe not recently, but I'm sure they have.
But what they're in terms of the successes that they have with those, they're far few or they're very far in the past that we forget about it. None of them have been very innovative in the past little while. It's all getting an idea and evolving upon that.
So, so what's the solution though? Like, is Noster really a zero to one? Like, it's not a zero to one. I talked about this with somebody else. Who did I talk about this with? With Drew Armstrong yesterday from Cathedra on the CBP show. Like, he's of the opinion that there's a lot more zero to ones out there and we're just, stagnating and looking for them. I'm not 1,000% sure that's the case at the moment. And the things that we're used to seeing zero to ones, like when people say tech is a zero to one potential industry, maybe I'm just not the guy to be asking I have a narrow field of vision in this regard, but I don't see a lot of zero to one opportunities. The question is, can you do something better than the next person? And there's that old saying, I don't know where it's from, and it's probably not that old a saying actually, given the subject matter, but you have to basically have a service that's 10x better to get people to come over from where they are now, because the hurdles are just so any point of friction is just so severe these days for people, because they're used to having zero friction, that the 10x is basically the threshold for user movement. I mean, we're way far afoot here, but it's interesting to think about. You're right. It's where are the zero to ones? I don't know if there's many left in tech and in social.
There's probably a unlimited amount. It's just finding it, doing it, marketing it, and showing that there's a need for it, because that's it. Like, you have to convince people, you have to buy it. Because without this, your life is not going to be worthwhile. Yeah. So they've done it with a lot of things, but they were all just building on something that's already been built on. Lost my video. Am I still there? Yes, I am. Okay, let's move on. Big tech they're not looking too good, because it looks like lawmakers in Congress, they're eyeing the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act, BIPA. BIPA? I'll call it BIPA. I'm not sure exactly if BIPA is.
You got to rate that name or no? If we're rating that name, it's like a one.
Well, this is a government one, so we can't really rate them because it's just, putting an acronym on a long act, so whatever it is. So why are these big tech companies shaking in their boots? Well, it's possible that they could use this BIPA or BIPA as a model for federal privacy legislation. That's because BIPA is one of the strictest privacy laws in the country, and it allows individuals to sue companies for big dollars if biometric data is mishandled. And these devices are getting a lot of biometric data, not just devices, the companies themselves as well. So far, BIPA has been a huge pain in the butt for a lot of these tech companies, who have been hit with a bunch of lawsuits as a result. For example, In 2020, Facebook agreed to pay $650 million to settle a class action lawsuit alleging that it violated BIPA by collecting users' facial scans without consent. Naughty, naughty, Facebook. And in 2021, Apple, they agreed to pay $100 million to settle a similar lawsuit. And gotta love these class action lawsuits, Joey. Everybody who signs up gets 10 bucks for doing so, give or take. But it's the lawyers that ultimately win in the end. But so it's no wonder that big tech is really so worried with the BIPA becoming the basis of potentially federal privacy legislation. And after all, if this happens, they could be facing a lot more lawsuits on a grander scale and a lot more financial pain as a result. But you know what? It's time for these big companies. They should learn from these lessons of the past, start respecting people's privacy. Or if they don't, they'll just continually get sued and pay millions and millions of dollars as a result. The choice ultimately is theirs. But either way, I'm going to keep my eyes on this and I'm going to laugh if they continue to pay the... You know what? Respect our privacy. That's what I asked them to do. Respect our privacy.
I have two things to say about this, and I'll try and keep it short in the interest of time. One is that I think that those companies should pay a steep price for leaking biometric data, especially these days. We've seen how that data is used. Face scans, open your phone, open your bank account, open your door. Some of the time, you know, if you have one of these Bluetooth doorbell things, I'm sure you can make it do that. Among other uses. Second thing, Len, on the other side of that coin, the real price they should be paying is that people stop using their devices when these leaks happen. We see this in other spaces, but the cell phone industry has become so bimodal now, basically between Apple products and, you know, whatever Android manufacturer you're using. If these companies leak your data, you know, there's not really anywhere else for you to go except to another company that's probably going to either scrape or use or leak your data too. And you don't see that in too many other industries, right? For example, you know, a hardware manufacturer in Bitcoin decides to share your keys with their server in the name of protecting you in case you lose your seed phrase, you can go to another wallet. If your car stops working really well, or you're tired of buying Honda Civics every 5 years, you just go to get a, you know, Buick, what's another brand name, Volvo, whatever. In phones, cellular phones, there's not really that option. There's a handful of handset manufacturers. Most of them are using the same hardware, presumably have the same holes as far as like security and stuff like that. So tough, but you know, big fines, man. It's a first step. I think those companies need to feel the pressure. But you know, Apple's worth what? I think they crossed the 3 trillion Rubicon 2 weeks ago or a week ago. Like, you know, 650 or 100 million, or you know, even a billion, 2 billion. It's really not much. Doesn't matter to them. It's a drop in the bucket. Until you start charging, you know, 500 billion, you know, $1 trillion, then maybe they'll think about it. But for now, I doubt you're going to change anything materially in those companies.
Yeah, they just triple the price of the iPhones and
you and me pay exactly right, like the consumers pay.
That's essentially what it is, and they have every right to do that. So, move on. ChatGPT, it's ChatGPT, they're always doing something, but hackers have been using ChatGPT to do something very interesting, and it's generating Windows keys for Windows 10 and Windows 11. And the question I ask, who the heck wants to use those OSs? But
I use Windows 11.
I don't know. Hey, come let's on. Get you off it, man. Like, oh, after this, we'll transition you to a nice open source platform that respects your privacy. But yeah, this stuff is rather funny because this is the same AI chatbot. This can write poetry, it can translate languages, it can write fake news, it can do so many things. But now it's creating and generating legitimate looking Windows activation keys. Stuff is funny. And how does it work? Well, ChatGPT, it's trained on a massive data set. It's trolled this, it's obtained it, and it's continually getting it bigger and bigger. And it has all this text and code that's in it, and it's has including in it some Windows activation key. So when somebody goes out there and asks the chatbot to generate a Windows activation key, it just draws from its knowledge base, and it does that by that through that method. So it makes sense, but it comes with the added bonus of security vulnerability. If a hacker can generate Windows keys through ChatGPT, they're using a pirated version of Windows. And let's be perfectly honest, you don't know what security risks are included in a pirated version of Windows. Somebody could put something on there that you just don't know what's there. And this is, you know, there's you're going to be dealing with these unknown risks. And this is in addition to the known risks that you have to deal with genuine copies of Windows. But Microsoft is aware of the CD key creation vulnerability and is working hard to fix it. But I'm just telling you, if you're looking for a way to get Windows activation keys, you know, there's better ways to do it. You could sign up for Microsoft's Insider program. You could even go on eBay and find one of these legitimate copies of Windows for very, very cheap. So do yourself a favor, though. Learn to use one of these open sources. I'm looking at you, Joy. These open sources OS that respect your freedom and privacy. Windows certainly does not. And just generating keys to get around this, man, oh, man, not only you're cheap, but you're giving up information at the same time.
I use this computer for the show and for gaming, and I have other computers around that I use from time to time. Like this one behind me does some video rendering once in a while, among others. I have ChatGPT 4 on my phone, and I just ask, can you provide me a Windows 11 activation key? It gives me a nice long paragraph telling me how it can't and why. It's illegal and against OpenAI's policy.
You got to social engineer it.
Yeah, so there must be a way to do it. I got to think about how to do that maybe or look it up. But end of the day, like, Len, if the data scraping continues for those chatbots, they keep updating them, they keep upgrading the capabilities, it's only a matter of time until the least of our worries is Windows 11 keys. It's, can you give me an Ontario driver's license number? It's, can you give me a MasterCard that'll work, like a, you know, with an expiry date and a CVV number, whatever those numbers are. This stuff is all going to come at some point. And I would just caution people, like, you got to be super hyper aware now about all this, and it's everywhere. It's even in, you know, chatbot responses now. I'd be curious. I'm waiting, Len, honestly, for the first time that somebody posts, you know, a screen cap or a chat log where they social engineer, you know, the Rogers or Bell Mobility chatbot into having like a, you know, a sex conversation with them, you know, through a couple of different cues and prompts, because they just know how the thing works, right? It's only a matter of time. These companies, not necessarily Rogers or Bell, but, you know, just as an example, have proven that they care a lot more about scale than they do about quality when it comes to the way they use these things. And so I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing that either. You think SIM swapping is easy with a teenager at the mall? Wait till you see how easy it is with GPT-4 running things behind the desk there.
I can't believe that's just an app for that. Is it an app, or are you using like the Windows prompt?
No, OpenAI has an app. My wife, through her job, uses it once in a while. Actually, you know what, Len? I gotta say it's pretty good. It does a good job giving you, if you know, I'm getting better with the prompting. If you know how to use the prompts, which I'm not saying that I do, but I am improving, it'll always give you a pretty solid foundation with which you can work and edit and make detail changes and go from there. It doesn't hallucinate too much, at least not in the stuff I'm doing. It's fun.
No, let's move on. And looks like the government is trying to buy your browser history.
So we could just honestly just run this story every week. Just keep it in the letter and just change like a couple of lettered agencies, like a general who's worried, whatever, and just run it every week. Stick it in there. It's like death and taxes, a sure thing.
But apparently they're trying to buy your history, your browser history, but there are two lawmakers out there that want to put an end to this practice. And these are Representatives Warren Davidson, who happens to be a Bitcoiner, by the way, and some other dude, because it's hard for me to pronounce his name. They are introduced an amendment to the 2023 National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA. And this amendment would prevent the government from buying Americans' web browsing and internet search history. The amendment, which is called the Fourth Amendment Protection Act, would allow bar law enforcement agencies from exchanging anything of value from information about people that would typically require a warrant, court order, or a subpoena under law. Now, the question I would ask, how are they getting this information history, the web browser? Is there a back door that they have or something, like, or do they go to the ISPs? It could be the ISPs that are providing this.
There's always somebody in the chain, right? Like, you know, famously email, right? Everyone talks about that. Like, it's not secure. You think anything else is not secure? It's just not, man.
This is why I communicate with CB radios, and it's all code word. In other words, the government would no longer be able to circumvent the Fourth Amendment by buying your browser history from a third party if this amendment is accepted. And the two congresspeople say that the amendment is necessary to protect American privacy rights. And Mr. Davidson is a huge Bitcoiner, so maybe one day we should talk to him a little bit further, because he's seems to be a good guy to talk to about this and along with a few other things. But anyways, it said that the government should not be able to buy your browser history without a warrant, said Davidson in his statement. It makes perfect sense to me. But the amendment is right now in the early stages through the legislative process, but it has support from a number of different privacy groups. Will it get approved and ultimately put into law? Who the heck knows? But it's going to take a long of hurdles to get there, but it would be a major, major win for privacy advocates if it ever gets there. And this goes to show you that, you know, you might be using Incognito, you might be using Tor, you might be using whatever. You never know. There could be some different ways that they're getting your browser history, and they're buying it, man. That's funny stuff.
They're buying it. The worst part, Len, is that you and me are both like kind of nodding and smiling when, you know, if Davidson Jones get the bill through and it, you know, it turns out that this does put up another barrier, you know what's going to happen. They're going to buy it anyways, or steal it, or spy on you some other way and not tell you about it and use the FISA court or use whatever to justify it. Or you said something online we didn't like, so we had to bug your phone. The story that I thought we were going to see today, and I'm surprised it's not mentioned here, is France actually just talked about passing a very strange bill that'll probably be in next week's show, where they can turn on your location services, your microphone, or your camera at any time without telling you, if a judge agrees that you're that enough evidence has, you know, been presented against you or not in your favor, that it's required. And so, you know, I know that capability exists, right? We know that there's ways to get that data, whether it's through an ISP or through, you know, buying the data from a third party or whatever. To me, the longer, like if you just stretch this road out to, you know, ad infinitum, there's no end to the data breach and overreaching by governments. It never stops. It never stops. You see it everywhere. You see it in banking. You're starting to see it in stuff like messaging, as far as encryption and end-to-end encryption. And now you're seeing it even in your web browsing history. Why do you need to see that? Why does anybody need to see that? The answer is because they want to and they can. And that's it. That's all there is to it.
It's a good thing there are free and open source software versions for phones and computers where you could look at the code to see if this type of malicious activity is included in there. And if it is, you could scrub it out or find something else that meets your needs. So they may have these mechanisms to do it, but not on a lot of devices that have been vetted against it. So
it's worth noting that, you know, I saw someone talking about this online today. If the government wants all this access, fine. Then provide everybody in the country with a phone and make them use the phone that you give them and pay for the phone that they use and pay for all the services and pay for all the stuff they do with the phone. And then you can have the data. But the fact is they want to have their cake and eat it too. It's constantly the theme with these stories. It's infuriating.
Richard Stallman from the Free Foundation, he's a little bit of an oddball, but he's always talked about that devices that we carry in our pockets, we're paying for it. We buy it and we pay a monthly service, and still that information is stolen from us. And people are not willing to give it up. They'll happily keep it. And,
your buddy Lewis Rossman has a good comment about that. You know, if the phone in your pocket is not really yours or not really yours to like lock down or repair or whatever, you know, do you really own it? And it's a great question. If they can get in there anytime they want, they can take the information anytime they want. They don't need to tell you, you're not allowed to repair it. Is it really yours? You know, maybe the you'll own nothing and be happy thing has already started and we just don't even realize it.
I'm going to recommend everybody listening get Graphene OS on a Pixel. You'll be much, much happier and you can protect your privacy at the same time. But one more story we have. This is a late addition to this show.
Leave it to Mark to stuff us with like this is the most text I've seen in a story probably since we started the show. He just slams it in there in a reply.
Last minute. Well, it's the Internet Society of Canada chapter. Well, they're going bonkers over here.
Yeah, I know.
In the 2023 Chairman's Report, they've been flexing over there on all their accomplishments, which include dropping knowledge on AI adoption rates in Canada, advocating for affordability, accessibility, fairness, and security of the Internet, bringing together thought leaders to develop positions on proposed Canadian legislation, providing resources to educate their members, and giving all voices a chance to be heard. And the report also threw shade at the government, saying that Canada is in danger of falling behind global competitors if it does not step up its AI game. And it looks like that this is funny stuff. Like, I want to see the next report when it comes out, because they're going to be roasting everybody out there that they pretty much hate. But this is funny. This is just a report that's flexing their muscles. I love to see this. I've never seen one before, so I want to see this one again. This is pretty funny stuff.
I am interested in this. I want to talk to this guy. I'm going to ask if he'll come on Access of Easy, and we can talk to him on Access of Easy, the first ever
Tim guest. Denton, right?
Guest show. No, isn't it Philip? I thought it was Philip something. I forget now. But the thing that stuck out to me about this letter, too, is there's some very pointed words in here about C11 and C18. And in reading the report, I'm happy to see that there's no stone left unturned as far as the rationale for why those bills are scary and should be worrisome to Canadians, the illiberal tendencies of government, the importance of freedom of expression, the importance to stay away from self-censorship and these things. I recommend everyone read this. I am going to start paying attention to this organization, Len. I didn't even know this organization existed until like 3 hours ago, 4 hours ago.
Yeah.
That email. Yeah. And I'm very interested in this because this is important stuff. And oftentimes on this program and on the CBP, we talk about and ask our guests and ask each other and read about things. And we wonder, how can we get involved? Who can we support? Is there someone I can give money to? You know, you and I direct donations on the other show to different organizations we find are adding value. I think this is an important group. I need to learn more about this. Maybe I'll ask Mark. But this is, to me, something I think everyone should be reading, especially nowadays when you're not getting the full story on something like 11 or 18, C11 or C18 from the media or from your Facebook friends. Or from your Threads friends now, I guess, if you want to call them that. And it's hard to find exactly why you should be concerned. And this group, to me, is, at least insofar as reading this letter, seems like an impartial observer and a group that wants the internet to succeed and flourish. And in those two things, I have difficulty finding fault. So I'm interested in supporting these guys any way that I can.
So Tim Denton is the guy that wrote this piece. He's the chair. Let's bring him on. Bring him on Access of Easy as well. Let's have a chat.
We should talk to him. As soon as I've done this, I'm going to email this guy and see if he wants to do it. I'll send him a link to the show and say, we do this every week. We'd love to talk to you for half an hour.
Yeah. But you know what? He'd blast everything inside. So he'd just
be. So what? He's got an opinion, and he's got an informed opinion, right? To me, reading this looks like this man is informed. He understands the problems. Whether he agrees... He doesn't mention
the ex-CRT. He's ex-CRTC commissioner. So
is
given
he?
His, wow. Yeah, his okay. credentials of what he does. So you're right. He does understand the game. He's been there. He's done that. And so for somebody like him to say something, there's some credence to it. He has some pedigree here. A lot of people don't have this type of knowledge.
We got to try and get this guy. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, agreed. That's it. That's the last story of the day. If you enjoyed this program, I'm sure you did. If you stuck around this long, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe on YouTube. Send us a tweet on Twitter. And we'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Friday morning, I guess they're going to release this. I'm not sure exactly what time of day, but the EasyDNS team will get it out to you Friday. You guys have a nice weekend, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, take care.